In today's episode of the Brains Bite Back podcast, we are joined by Sarah Howell, SVP of Partner Programs of Infinite, a fintech company developing tools to help banks thrive in the digital fintech and financial markets. She joins us to discuss banking as a service, what it is, and how it stands to impact our banking services. In this episode, we will discuss the story behind the name Infinite and why it was chosen as the name of the business. We'll also chat about ecosystem strategy, what is it and how does it relate to banking as a service? And additionally, we discuss how advanced banking is in different countries around the world.
So Sarah Howell, grateful to be here. Thank you so much for the opportunity. I come from a background in banking and financial technology, from the card space, the card networks, to core processing. And now I'm at Infinite. And Infinite is a company that allows banks to create embeddable products above their core. So whether or not the product they're wanting to create is embedded into their own digital banking platform or embedded into another platform that is a non-financial platform. So excited to be here.
Thank you. And I'm really excited to have you here. I think this will be a really unique conversation because it's not something that we've necessarily had before. But I think it's really important to discuss. But before we go ahead, I am so curious to know, like, what's the story behind the name Infinite and why was it chosen as the name of the business? And for listeners, it's spelled I-N-F-I-N-A-N-T.
Yes. Unfortunately, I cannot spell Infinite correctly now because of having spelled it for my company for so long. But Infinite is really, it was a name that our CEO had just acquired just the domain name for years and years ago. And our CEO is from the banking industry. He stood up a digital banking platform and sold that to one of the large core banking technology providers in 2020. And he had this name floating around. And so he was able to apply it to Infinite. And really the wordplay plays nicely with what we do because a lot of banks look at their core as giving them the ability to create products. And really what we're working with and enabling banks to do is to create products above the core so that they are not as handcuffed to the core and able to move with a greater agility and in market and stand up products faster.
Awesome. Fantastic. Well, listeners will know I usually ask my guests the story behind the name of the company, but this one I definitely had to ask. I was super curious about that. So thank you for sharing that.
Great question.
Yeah. And also, I want to know, like, can you share with our listeners, what is banking as a service and what does that mean?
Good question. So I would say that banking as a service is the how. Embedded finance is the what, and I'll explain. If I am in a non-banking application like Apple, right? Apple is not a bank, but I have the ability to utilize Apple Pay. I have the ability to add my card to Apple Pay and pay on different websites with the click of a button because it's just easier. It's embedded into my Apple experience. And that's what I consider embedded finance. It's placing a financial product at the point of need outside of a financial experience. Or a financial application. And so that's embedded finance. We're seeing a lot of new use cases for embedded finance from B2B, consumer use cases, as the digital economy just becomes more prevalent and we become more hyper-connected, we're looking as consumers to have a financial experience embedded into non-financial purchases or experiences.
I had no idea it already played such a big role in life and society. And well, I've already been using it without even knowing. Right. So that's really interesting.
Well, and that's embedded finance, right? Kind of what I explained about Apple, but banking as a service is all of the infrastructure that has to happen in order for us as consumers to have that experience. And so banking as a service is what are the technologies that are needed? What are the regulatory things that considerations that have to happen when that financial product exists outside of a digital banking app? And so banking as a service is what enables us as consumers to have embedded finance experiences.
Okay, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I feel very lucky that we have these experiences, because it's just, it's so easy now. I feel so grateful to be alive in this day and age, because I think we just, personally for me, I feel so blessed to have all of these services, and everything just seems to be getting smoother and easier from my experience anyway.
Right, right. But there's a lot of work that goes on behind the scenes.
Behind the scenes, yeah.
Right, yeah, in order to make that happen. And what it's done is it's really created a hyper-connectivity in the infrastructure layer of the technology layers. So orchestrating APIs across disparate systems in order for those experiences to play out well for the end consumer.
Awesome, fantastic. Well, I did want to mention something else. On your website, you have a blog titled Ecosystem Strategy. What is it, and how does it relate to banking as a service and digital supply chain disruption? And in the article, you discuss the industry shift from a traditional market strategy to an ecosystem strategy. Can you share with our listeners what this means and why it's important?
Yeah, sure. This article is really meant for bankers. It's targeted towards bankers who have, if you think about banking, bankers have always owned the end-to-end experience. And what I mean by that, of the supply chain, bankers own the manufacturing of the financial product and the distribution of that financial product. Either it was being distributed through a branch, or with, digitization coming along, it was being distributed through a bank-owned digital banking app. Okay. So from end to end, banks own the supply chain. Now, they might use suppliers on the back end, core processors, card providers, but those were always suppliers of the bank. And it was the bank creating the IP for the financial products. With embedded finance and banking as a service, what happened was a lot of the technology providers, like an Apple or somebody that saw a use case to embed a financial product, they didn't necessarily go to the bankers to develop that product. They went straight to the banker suppliers, so the card providers, the core processors, in order to create those financial products. So we had a disruption in the supply chain. So there are some banks that have really adopted the understanding that that happened, and how can I pivot and make sure that I'm staying relevant and I'm part of that embedded finance flow. And then there are others who are still very focused on serving their customer base and owning the end-to-end supply chain. And the reason that I joined Infinit was because I felt like Infinit gave banks the opportunity to play in both strategies. The traditional market strategy, where I own the end-to-end experience, I'm producing the financial product, and I am distributing that financial product within my ecosystem, as well as the embedded finance strategy, where I might be a part of the helping produce that product, because from a regulatory perspective, I need to sign off on that product before it can go to market. But I'm aware of the fact that that product will not exist in an application that is bank owned. And so those are two completely different strategies for a financial institution to embrace. And so I'm writing a lot on the blog because I want to be sensitive to the fact that that is a big strategic shift for a lot of banks to make, and it's not easy. And so the ecosystem strategy and discussions about that is meant to help them make that transition and bring their organizations along as they transition to a dual strategy of, direct and then embedded.
Okay. Cool. I mean, I have to admit, as a novice like myself, it sounds very advanced. And I have to say that I'm in a position where I'm based in Colombia. And one thing when it comes to banking in general, I've noticed that Colombia is so far behind. So I'm really excited about all of these movements. And like we mentioned before, I feel lucky to be alive in such a fascinating time, although I definitely do feel like I'm in a period of time which is like 10 or 20 years behind the rest of the world, being from the UK myself. And I don't want to be too arrogant, but I definitely do or have noticed that the UK, alongside the US, has fantastic banking products, banking systems, and the disparity between the two countries is like so stark. So I definitely feel like I'm on a bit of an island when it comes to all of this. But it sounds like some exciting things are certainly happening over there, at least.
Well, yes, but then it's funny that you say what you did, because a lot of folks will say that the U.S. lags behind. And part of that is it depends on the government structure, mm-hmm. right? You have a highly regulated industry where changes for embedded finance are standards for embedded finance and open banking are mandated at the state level. It does make it to a certain degree a little bit easier for companies to align to those standards. And you know, you brought up the UK, the EU, the European Union launched PSD2, which was a regulatory mandate. Well, not really. It was for standards of how we would do open banking, how banks would open up their platforms for other third parties to extract data about their users and to build financial products. Those types of standards do not exist in the US. And so there are movements for different players within the space to align on standards. FDX is one movement. The FDX consortium is one movement to say, okay, if we're going to build APIs for open banking, these are the standards that we as a consortium agree to. So, okay. Yeah, it depends.
It depends. Yeah, entirely. I suppose it's perspective, but it's so funny to hear like the US lagging behind in that sense, because I'm just like, oh wow, if they're lagging behind, where are we? But anyway, that's a subject for another conversation. I would love to know as well though, like, are there other companies operating in this space, and if so, like, how do you folks differentiate yourself from the competition?
Yeah, great question. So there are other companies, definitely other companies that have set out to solve for the embedded finance needs. And like I said earlier, some of the technologists who wanted to build a product, they bypassed the banks and they went straight to the bank suppliers. Those infrastructure providers like card processing providers and Core. Card processing was really the main providers that they went to, because you could get the interchange revenue and you could split it. So it was a commercial interest that benefited both parties. And so we ended up with a structure where you had a technology platform that had a partnership directly with a card processor. And then that card processor would bring a bank along, or that technology provider would go out and get a bank. And then the technology provider would say, okay, this is the kind of product that we want to bring to market. The card processor would build it and the bank would approve it or talk about what changes need to be made in order for it to be compliant with the regulations. So that's kind of this process we've evolved into. So other players in the space that are doing similar to what we're offering would be like a card processor or a core provider with APIs that they're exposing to those technology providers that want to build products. There's been another evolution in the space where you have almost what they call BaaS connectors or BaaS middleware providers. And those guys will connect banks on the back end for settlement. And then they will have an API dev portal that allows the technology providers to come straight to them. And they're distributing different programs across the bank network that they've created on the back end. I would say that what our platform allows banks to do is to actually own that API development platform. So they're not having to outsource to a BaaS middleware or BaaS connector provider. So some of the names in the space that do that are like a Unit, a Treasury Prime, or Synctera. Bond is another one, Rise. There are these middleware providers that are providing a dev portal for technology companies to connect to. Personally, we feel like the bank should own those dev portals and have a greater contribution to the production of the products that are being manufactured on behalf of that technology provider, so that they can have greater control of the financial embedded products that are being made.
Okay, cool. I think I get that. And I can see how that would be a strong factor to distinguish yourself with there. And really, I only have one last question for you. Like, what are you folks focusing on next? Like, what's on the horizon for you lot at Infinite?
Yeah, we think that embedded finance is applicable not just for technology companies, but also for banks to embed other products, especially like real-time payments and maybe more horizontal offerings like accounting, investments, insurance, all of these things that banks are currently offering on in an analog fashion while you're just signing up for it. We're looking at integrating those into our solution set. So it makes it easier for banks to create a digital experience where those other products are offered up through their digital banking app, or that they can resell to their embedded finance customers. So really just a hyper-connectivity of different products and offerings that are adjacent to financial services, but may not be traditionally in the financial services space.
Awesome. Fantastic. Well, it sounds like you folks have really got a lot on your plate at the moment, and you're moving forward with some really cool stuff. And I want to know, like, if listeners are listening and they want to find out more about you or keep up with the work that you folks are doing, or even reach out to you directly, Sarah, how can they do that? What's the best channels to go through?
Yeah, sure. Feel free to just email me at sarah.howell@infinite.com. That's infinite, infinite.com. Or just look us up online, follow us on LinkedIn, Twitter. We're out there, but with the infinite spelling of infinite.
Yeah, very important.
Yeah.
But we'll have all those links in the show notes there for you, so people can check those out. But otherwise, Sarah, I want to thank you so much for joining me today. This has been a really new topic for me, and yeah, it sounds really exciting.
Yeah, thank you so much for the time, Sam. I really appreciate it.
Growing a company has many hurdles, from securing funding to expanding your business capabilities to ranking better on search. Each business challenge is uniquely complex. The solution to these challenges is growth-focused digital PR and marketing, and that is where our sponsor, Publicize, comes in. Publicize sets itself apart from traditional PR companies. It does not charge large retainers or churns out press releases, whether you've got a newsworthy announcement or not. Publicize builds businesses' online presence and gets high-quality PR and media coverage for startups and entrepreneurs who are priced out of a broken PR industry. What's more, listeners of Brainspike Back can find the tools and resources they need to overcome common hurdles that many startups face when trying to generate long-term growth by visiting publicize.co/BBB. That's publicize.co/BBB. That is it for today's episode. Thank you for joining us. I hope you've learned something, and if you have benefited from today's episode, please consider leaving us a review on iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcast, as these reviews really help us grow the show. You can also follow us wherever you get your podcasts, including YouTube. Just search Brainspike Back and you will find us. We hope you join us for more episodes in the future, and until then, take care. Disclosure: this episode contained a client of an Aspasio portfolio company.